Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. Midweek edition already, and we are into October. It's the second day of October, Wednesday, 2024. Tom Fairbanks, my very able and willing engineer producer, on the other side of the glass. Tom, looking at the forecast, I went ahead 10 days, and I saw maybe a normal temperature. When I say normal, it should be high about 90 to 92 degrees. Maybe
well,
10
are
days.
Are we going to have to change the calendar and make our fall dates and our summer dates at different times of the year?
Yeah, we might. We might say that, like, summer begins at Halloween.
I mean, the fall may. Me. Yeah, the fall may begin when the spooks
Halloween.
Are out.
Yeah. All right, we'll begin our 15th year with our radio project in January. We're coming to you from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. The Bustos Media Company, which owns KVOI, has done a great job. We've got five radio stations under one roof, and they're all doing well, including the newest acquisition, The Drive 101.7. And a quick note, they'll be teaming up with my show to do our weekend watch, where we preview some stuff going on the weekends. We'll be doing that on Friday. So it will be a weekend watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City. So that's teaming up with our friends over at The Drive. The Buckmaster Show, coming to you from KVOI, and we've got our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. That's my website, and I'm very proud of the fact that we've got pretty much 98-99% of every radio show we have done since the first week of January 2011. The Buckmaster Show live line, when we do our telephone interviews, the live line number is 790-2040. Folks are always welcome to join in the program. Our program is not really a kind of live line driven program, as far as we try to have newsmakers in studio, but we utilize the live line a lot, and it is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The vice mayor of the city of Tucson, Kevin Dahl, is with me in studio, and we bring in Kevin usually the first Wednesday of the month. That can change depending on, sometimes the council meetings are on the first Wednesday of the month. The vice mayor, Kevin, great to see you.
Thank you.
You being the vice mayor with the mayor yesterday, October 1st, she was in Mexico City for the inauguration, the historic occasion of the first woman president of Mexico. Dr. Sheinbaum is now the president of Mexico. So with her out...
If there was
could
anything...
we call you mayor? Could
no.
we call you mayor?
Yes. At most, I'm an acting mayor or pro temp. But there was no official duties that needed to be done. So I continue to do my work as city council member for Ward 3.
All right. You are also a very dedicated environmentalist. You were for 14 years the senior program manager of the National Parks and Conservation Association before your election to the council as a Democrat in 2021. Also headed up the Native Seed Search here and the birding organization formerly known as the Tucson Audubon.
We're chuckling because we talked about the naming changes that's going on in the birding community. And,
yes.
Yeah, and they're still Tucson Audubon Society, but it seems likely that they will remove John James Audubon from their name. Mm-hmm. Because people have been concerned about his life back in the day where he did things that mm-hmm. people aren't proud of. So mm-hmm. I was at first very upset because, you know, for many years, Tucson Audubon Society was a well-respected name in Tucson, I think still is. But mm-hmm. as they evolve to, I think the name's going to be the Southern Arizona Birding Alliance, I think they'll do fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we move on to other things, and it is interesting that the group that oversees birders, it's the Birder Organization,
American Ornithological
Thank
Association.
Thank you. They're having their huge worldwide conference this week, and they're looking at name changing Everybody's probably heard of an Anna hummingbird. So they're changing the name of birds that have a human connection. Is that safe to say?
That's completely safe to say, and I'm sure it will happen. And the thinking is that some of the humans that had bird names on it were wonderful people. Some were just somebody's friend and has no real connection to the bird. So this is the group that's taken on to do the common names. These are not the scientific names, genus and species, that the birding community uses. It's in all the bird guides. And the thought is, well, let's be more descriptive. Instead of Wilson's warbler, it will be yellow-capped warbler or something that's descriptive or geographically based. It's going to be a boon for people who publish birding guides.
Oh, my goodness. So all the birding guides will be suddenly obsolete.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Though the many people bird using apps now, the Merlin app or the Cornell University app, and they can easily change those.
Yeah, the apps are cool. You could hold your phone, your iPhone, up and record or let the apps, I don't know how it works, and like what bird call is this?
Yeah,
and it will tell you.
It's amazing. You don't have to memorize the bird calls anymore, as some of us have done for specific areas. We can go to New Guinea and use the app and discover there's a toucan in over there in that tree. Amazing technology.
All right, you're prominently featured in this front page story, Congressman Raul Grijalva. First elected to Congress in 2002, and I remember it well because I hosted the debate on Channel 6 when there were like 14 candidates or something. And I think we did an hour show and each candidate wound up getting 2 minutes. But anyway, it was back in 2002 that Congressman Grijalva was first elected, and he's decided that he will, if elected to this next term, this would be his last term. And he is battling lung cancer, but he's had a very impressive career. And as you point out in the Arizona Daily Star, good friend to the environmentalists.
And a good friend of mine, too. For many years, he was the go-to person for conservation in Arizona and the West, and has had a very successful career in advocating for protecting lands, protecting endangered species. A lot of concerns about environmental justice. You're going to be talking with City Water on Friday about...
We are. About John Kamak.
About the forever chemicals that are in our aquifer.
Yeah, the PFABs. Yeah.
PFAS?
PFAS.
Though I like the prefabs.
Hey, prefab. It's a fab. No, they're not fab.
They're not the fabulous at all.
No.
But those are affecting people in lower income communities more than people who are in richer communities. Environmental justice, he's been at the forefront of that battle. He's done so much good for Southern Arizona, for protecting the Grand Canyon, for enlarging Saguaro National Park, the creation of Ironwood Forest National Monument. His fingerprints are on that as well, and so many other issues. He's not only battling cancer, he's gotten through his treatments.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not going out in public yet because he is still recovering. There's some physical therapy, I understand, that one of his legs isn't working very well yet.
Mm-hmm.
But he's expected to recover. And I wish him all the best and welcome back when he gets back on his feet, kind of pun intended. But he is making a great decision. This will be his last term of office, and what a great career he's had.
And I'm sure he is supporting what is going to be known as the Santa Cruz River Urban National Wildlife Refuge.
Yes, and though we don't need congressional approval for this, the Fish and Wildlife Service has the administrative ability through the Secretary of the Interior with the approval of the President to designate new wildlife refuges. This will be a unique one. It's kind of a hybrid. The feds will own a few pieces of land that were donated or they purchase. But mostly it's an administrative boundary for funding, education, better interpretation along the Santa Cruz River from Nogales, Mexico to the northern Pima County border. And there's fabulous habitat that's been restored. You know, the river is coming back. And so this is part of the process of celebrating the river, recognizing that it has connections to Tucson heritage. We wouldn't be here in Tucson if there wasn't a river at the base of A Mountain. That was reliable because so the geology underneath the river flow. So I'm really looking forward to the Fish and Wildlife Service designating this. The city of Tucson, at our next meeting, it's on our consent agenda, so we're acknowledging that we're going to vote yes. We'll be endorsing it, as has Pima County and Santa Cruz County and many organizations and local community groups, neighborhoods.
I was surprised to read it's about 90 miles, the length here from Mexico to Marana.
It's a good stretch, and it includes some great birding areas. The mm-hmm. Southern Arizona Birding Alliance, formerly known as Tucson Audubon, has been right. very interested in this. And the city of Tucson has some properties along it. Our Sweetwater Wetlands mm-hmm. is wonderful habitat. We have parks along it that could benefit from projects in conjunction with the Fish and Wildlife Service. It doesn't have a lot of downsides, and we have, except when people think that it's a land grab, but it's not. Any land that goes to the feds will be by willing seller or by donation by willing sellers. They're not going to condemn any land, and it doesn't create a huge federal monolithic structure. The feds will be a partner with a lot of us that are working to restore and bring kids to the river so they can see dragonflies and endangered fish.
I may ask Mr. John Kamik at Tucson Water about that when he's on the program Friday, what their role has been in all of this.
Sure.
Because you mentioned that the Sweetwater...
Wetlands. Yeah, yeah. Which is a great burning spot. I've also seen coyote, bobcat, and it's a great place for families and kids. Anybody who visits Tucson birding often stops there to see what water birds are there at that point in time.
When you live in the desert and when you can be around water,
every it's water a huge... is an oasis.
And, yeah.
And by the way, I think we've recently burned it. These ponds are overtaken by cattails, and every so often we have to clear them out so that the mosquito control in particular is more effective.
We'll talk a little bit about this unprecedented, and we've talked about it a couple of days here on the program, the unprecedented heat wave after we take our break, and what some young people are doing about climate change with Kevin Dahl, Vice Mayor, City of Tucson. Kevin, I know you love bakery goods, don't you?
I'm afraid I do.
Well, Mona's Danish Bakery, it's great to have Mona's back with us. They took a couple of months off for the summer. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. And last year they got, maybe it was, it would have been maybe earlier this year, they got the liquor license, so you can enjoy a glass of a beer, or you could have a mimosa with your breakfast up at Mona's Danish Bakery. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Take a break. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition. More with Councilman Kevin Dahl right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations, they receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio when we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Tucson City Councilman and Tucson Vice Mayor Kevin Dahl is with me in studio for his monthly visit. And I posted over the weekend on my Facebook page, perhaps you saw it, Kevin, I said, is this the new normal, this heat that we are experiencing? And we're not just breaking records or tying records by, well, when you tie, you don't go over 1 degree. We're breaking records by 4 and 5 degrees. I mean, this is unprecedented.
One day was 16 degrees above climate
16
norm.
16 degrees above the climate
norm.
It's
hot.
And, you know, I've asked a lot of people, what is the point of sustainability? What is there a tipping point? And of course, that's something that everybody would have to ask personally. Do I have a tipping point? I can't take the heat anymore. Some people have already said they can't do it. They're leaving.
I've heard from more than one person who's decided that Tucson's not a good place for their family to be 5-10 years from now, because the trends are it's getting hot every day. I'm not pessimistic, not optimistic. I think we just have to do the work. There are things that we can do to reduce carbon in the atmosphere, and we need to get serious about doing all of those things despite the heavy lobby from the oil industry. We need to electrify everything we can, because we can find low carbon sources of electricity. Solar would be the obvious one for us here in Tucson, but also wind, and make that transition. And there's ways everybody can personally reduce their carbon impact. And as society, we can lobby to reduce our carbon impact. I'm proud of the work Tucson is doing. We're not only talking about reducing carbon that the operations of the city produces, but setting up ways to help people, the most vulnerable, who are impacted by this. People have died this summer when the electricity went off in their trailer, and they had no ability to get themselves to cooling. So we need to take serious these threats to our residents, to the vulnerable residents. At the same time, we're making available better ways of doing things that doesn't contribute to the problem. We've known about this for a long time, haven't we?
Yes, we have. You do, all of us have to, as they say, play the hand that we have been dealt. And I think it's safe to say we are on the front line here in Tucson, Arizona, certainly Phoenix is, of a changing climate. And it's not, it's going to be the younger people who are going to really have to deal with these effects.
I have a photograph of Greta Thunberg at my desk to remind me that the younger people are very effective in speaking to the point that they want a future. And I've interacted a lot with the young climate activists here in Tucson who are doing fabulous work. In Tim Steller's column
that was today
was recognizing this problem. At the end, he quoted from the Sunshine Movement, which was a national movement of youth who are demanding climate action. There are people involved in that here in Tucson, young people, who are part of the Arizona Youth Climate Coalition. I appointed one of them as my Ward 3 representative to our Climate Commission, because I think their voice needs to be at the forefront, and they need to be involved in crafting the solutions. They have done this marvelous thing. They've taken on the Tucson Unified School District, worked with school board members and others to develop the best climate action plan for a school district in the nation.
Mm.
The school board's considering this at the October 29th meeting. So if any listener wants to contact the school board members and ask them to support these young people in these very reasonable proposals to change the energy we use to non-polluting, non-carbon-releasing energy as fast as we can.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly, again, being on the front lines, and the city put out a few years ago, I think it was like a 90-page action plan, right?
Yep, we have an action plan, and we're following through to it. It involves finding the resources for taking the steps that we need to take, making our fleet electric rather than gas guzzling, changing out oil burners that heat our large buildings to electric buildings, and working with TEP so that we get, much like they have an agreement with the University of Arizona, that we get renewable energy that we need to keep city businesses going.
We had Nicole Gillette, who is the City of Tucson's urban forester, on our program Monday. And I was surprised to learn from Nicole that we should, a desert city like Tucson, the ideal would be 15% of the geography would be trees. There are some places where it's zero in Tucson, and the average is about 4%.
We need to plant more trees. To any question that deals with the landscape, the answer is plant more trees, and plant them in a way where they're supported by the rainwater. Experts have our homegrown experts that are now experts that are consulted around the world know that you just have to build a hole, a basin, that will collect the rainwater next to the tree that you plant, and that tree will have a long and successful life. We need to learn. Remember the storm we had this summer where so many trees blew over?
Especially the northwest side.
So it's the right tree in the right place.
And I asked Nicole about that, and she said, from her survey, she went out there and did an extensive survey of the trees that came down, and she said the vast majority, Kevin Dahl, were non-native species.
That's right. And we have beautiful native trees. Palo Verdes, when they bloom yellow, we should have a Palo Verde festival in the spring when in some areas where there's a lot of them, it's just gorgeous.
Then ironwood?
Ironwood's a lovely tree, mesquite trees. These trees are food producing. We don't use them very often, but mesquite meal was a mainstay for indigenous people, and the either the pod or the bean of different Palo Verde trees. Even ironwood seeds are edible food. They provide habitat for birds that are being watched by this new organization, the Southern Arizona Birding Alliance.
Bringing it back to the birds.
I hate to say it, but trees are for the birds, and they're also for us. They provide shade. They provide beauty. There's nothing more lovely than a tree, I think.
The council's had a lot of news items have come out of your recent meetings, the issue about what's going on with homelessness and should the city use the grants pass Oregon Supreme Court decision to move on making homelessness a crime. The city has said they're not going to go that route, at least for now.
Yes. There's many people committing crimes that we can charge them with. We have an unbelievable homeless problem. City of Tucson. There's no denying that. In the last couple of weeks, I've met with five businesses along Fort Lowell, stretching from Alvernon to Oracle, that are being impacted mostly by vandalism and by the look of people hanging out in their parking lot that drives customers away. And this can't continue. We had meetings with the police so that we could come up with strategies and some infrastructure strategies to reduce areas that are likely for people to hang out. But if we do those strategies in isolation, it's just a whack-a-mole problem. Those people will go disturb some other businesses. So we need to work with all of our partners, Pima County in particular, because there's this overlay of fentanyl, which makes it all so much worse.
Mm-hmm.
We
have heard nationwide fentanyl overdoses have declined in some places, some cities, substantial. declines, and but the use is still up there.
The use continues. It can be as cheap as 20 cents a pill that will get you high for a long time and take your troubles away. Mm. We're not seeing as many overdoses because there's a lot of knowledge and ability to use Narcan. So when someone's in an overdose, they can get this that takes them out of the drug-induced problems right away. But we need to get people off of fentanyl and back into society.
And for your constituents, how do they reach you and your team?
Well, we have a website on the city site on Tucson.gov. If you Google my name in Ward 3, you'll find it. We're open 9 to 1, and people can email us or call the office.
Are you open each day of the week?
Monday through Friday, 9 to 1. Yeah.
Okay.
We reserve the afternoons for people to go to meetings or work at home if they have kids.
All right, Kevin Dahl, always a pleasure, and happy birding to you.
I mean, it's going to be fun learning all the new names.
Yeah,
look at it that way.
Yeah. All right, midway point of the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. University of Arizona agronomist Dr. Jeff Silvertooth is coming up, and we'll kind of stay with the environmental theme today on the Buckmaster Show as we talk with Dr. Silvertooth, the latest on water. He is such an expert on that particular topic, and we'll look forward to hearing from Jeff right after the mid-show break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The extraordinary beauty and craftsmanship of Mexican artisans is yours at Clay and Cloth, a beautiful new store in Barrio Viejo, featuring gorgeous clay pottery sourced from Oaxaca. Clay and Cloth also offers amazing textiles you won't find anywhere else in Tucson. See the selection on Instagram at MadMaxTheDog. Shop and visit Clay and Cloth. Open Tuesday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 210 South Convent, just south of Cushing, by the TCC.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. I am so impressed with Jan and Jack, the owners of Green Things. Not only have they turned that 13-acre site into just a destination, but when you have ownership that cares not only about their employees but the customers, that's the ticket to success. Green Things, 3384 East River Road. They have everything you could imagine that grows and grows well here in your garden at Green Things. GreenThingsAZ.com and their sister business is ZocaloVillage.com. All of that great garden accessories, pottery, and they also have some beautiful mesquite wood dining room sets. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. But for now, we're going to keep it in the studio, and it's a delight to welcome Jeff Silvertooth, Dr. Silvertooth, the Buckmaster Contributor on Agriculture. We try to bring him in every month. He is a professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. He served and has served on the faculty and works statewide in agriculture in this very large state of Arizona since 1987, and Jeff knows pretty much every back road. He's probably been on every county highway and state highway, certainly in the state. Professor Silvertooth, recognized as a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy and the Soil Science Society of America. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Very good, Bill. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Have a lot to unpack today, but something that caught my eye on the Tucson agenda. That's one of our news services that are popping up. We've got a couple of them now here in town, and they were talking about how the history of water battles, major battles over access to Arizona's most precious natural resource. They say it really kind of 1916 with the invention of the electric centrifuge pump, which they call a brilliant device that quickly became an instrument of rapid groundwater depletion, allowing wells to produce many more gallons of water per minute and from greater depths. And they say that kind of was the beginning of agriculture, mining, and the municipalities across the state in the race to what they call the bottom of the aquifers.
Well, that's true. And I would also add to that rural electrification has added to that. But you'd also say, well, there's one of the manifestations that comes along with that kind of technological development. There's been a lot of other things, of course, benefits to what we've realized in our society from that type of technological development and all those that come along with it. But you know, there's a lot of truth to that, how things have proliferated with our capacities over the past, particularly during the 20th century, and has given us the capacity to do more, produce more, but also has impacts on our natural resources and our environment, as that article points out.
And there were many of the people have said recently that agriculture is the bad guy here.
Well, agriculture commonly gets villainized in these discussions about resource management. You know, but that brings us right back to a point that is really, I think, very important for us today. When we're living in a state with these kinds of resource limitations, and particularly with after 23 years of drought, with water resource limitations that we're seeing, groundwater limitations that we're realizing are critical for us to try to manage appropriately for the today and for the future. We're dealing with urban population in this state. We're over 90% urban. We have almost 7.5 million people in this state. So right along with what those points were regarding the previous comments from that article, well, look at how the population has expanded. There was less than 1 million people in the state, less than probably 5.5 million people in the state at that time when that electrification of those pump technologies were developed. Now we have 7.5 million people in this state. We're supporting a lot of people. The question comes down to what type of water requirements are required or are necessary to support a population. The Department of Water Resources says that every Arizonan uses about 146 gallons of water a day. That's wet water. That's water we use out of the tap to drink, to prepare our food directly.
Boy, you could always win a trivia contest on that one. How many gallons of water do we... That seems just so surprising. So many gallons.
Right. It is. The surveys have been done where people are asked that, like you say. Yeah. Most of us are... That's the point, really. Most of us as Americans are disconnected from those realities. We have perceptions.
We have.
And as the old saying goes, facts may be facts, but perceptions become people's reality.
Mm-hmm.
The reality of beyond that, though, Bill, in terms of how much water does it require to produce the food that we eat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a very different story. That comes out to be about 800 to 2,000 gallons of water per day, per person, to support the food production that we require on an average basis here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You might say, well, that's quite a range, from 800 to 2,000. Well, a lot of us come right there. Actually, most of us push more towards the 2,000-gallon a day range because of the diet that we eat.
Mm-hmm.
And the higher the proportion of meat that you have in your diet, my friends in the animal science industry won't like me saying this, but it's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Meat takes more water to produce, so the more meat we consume, the higher the water requirement we have to support our diet. But you just take, for example, you just take an average and say if from 800 to 2,000 gallons a day, if it's 1,000 gallons a day in here in Arizona for all of our citizens, 7.5 million people, you add that all up, well, that comes up to about over 8 million acre feet of water required to produce the food that supports the people in this state. Now, we use about 7 million acre feet of water every year in this state, what's called wet water, you know, in our surface water and our groundwater. And we get criticized in agriculture, getting back to your point where agriculture gets to be villainized. We say, well, agriculture uses 70%. That's 5 million acre feet. If some folks would say, well, if we just get rid of agriculture, reduce them, well, our problems are solved. We can support a lot of people.
Yeah,
but someone's producing that food. So you take the 5 million acre feet we use in agriculture in Arizona versus the 8.3 million acre feet of water we use to support the food production, to support the population. We're in a deficit in this state of over 3 million acre feet. It's probably really more likely to be like closer to 2,000 gallons a day on personal consumption, which takes us all the way up to about 1,200 gallons of water, or 1,200, excuse me, acre feet of water, 1,200 million acre feet of water. Anyway, that takes us out to a point, Bill, where we're in a huge deficit with regard to the food that we consume versus the water we use to produce the food. That food's coming from somewhere, and someone else is using their water to produce our food. So we're in a network, and then people have to understand, well, what does it take for us with regard to water requirements for us to support this population? I think that's what we have to really think about. And how much water do we use every day? My diet is affecting this. I've been asked when I've presented this before, well, how are you, Jeff Silvertooth? Are you a vegetarian? No, I'm not. I like the meat in my diet.
Mm-hmm.
But I recognize those are the kinds of things we have to consider is what are our requirements to be able to survive here in Arizona and across the nation as well.
Sustainability, and this has come up because we're having this record heat. Breaking records, not just by 1 degree, but sometimes we're 15, 16, 17 degrees over normal. And with that, people are probably, and I know they are saying, you know, is there a point, sustainability, is there a point where people are going to say, I don't want to move to Arizona, or I'm going to leave Arizona because of the heat, Jeff Silvertooth?
Yeah, everybody has their own personal tolerance.
Breaking points, tolerances.
Mm-hmm. You know, they go back to that article that pointed out the 1916 advent for, you know, pumps. Well, one of the other things that's come along with electrification has been air conditioning.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that supports us in this state. So there's a lot of support that we have, I think, that's easy to take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the electrical power production, the food production, where does our water come from? These are critical issues. And sometimes very difficult to try to find a resolution to all of them, and particularly even singly, but certainly collectively. But I think it's important for us to think about that. Just go back to consider it takes, like I said before, between 8 and 12 million acre feet of water to produce the food that we're consuming here in this state regularly, but we're using only 5 million acre feet of water produced to goes to directly to production agriculture. I would look at that. Of course, I'm biased in working in agriculture. Arizonans are getting a bargain, and we have to we need to think about what are the limits that we have with all of these resources that we're using. You know, temperature fits right into it, electrification, air conditioning. Mm-hmm. How much do we really need to support our lives here?
We are up against the break, but real quickly, when you see what happened with Hurricane Helene, when they've had really unprecedented flooding, and when you talk about 30 inches of rain or more in some areas from that storm, this question always comes up. Why don't we just fix the Colorado River crisis by piping in water from the east?
Yeah, well, it's another one of those things that sounds like a simple solution to a complex problem. We are up against the break, like you say, I realize, but, you know, one thing you just want to, I guess we could leave to say is that there's a lot of state lines you have to cross, and there's a lot of folks that have some say on where that water goes and what happens with that pipeline we're talking about. You know, there have been a lot of discussions on that.
Water is spoken for on pretty much every acre in this country.
Yeah, the pipeline that's been discussed coming from, say, around the Kansas City area, the Missouri River, mm-hmm. or in the confluence, mm-hmm. heading down towards the Mississippi, that part of the country, all the way out here to the west. Well, it's going to cross some states that want some of that water, too. You know,
we'll take a break. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. Jeff Silvertooth is with us. Always a great guest. We'll have more with Jeff after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
2006, Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan, half-cent sales tax. They're both effective through June 30th, 2026. The region to receive continued funding for another 20 years. RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. Receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development. Visit rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Silver City's forecast looks really good to me right now with these temperatures that we are having these record-breaking temperatures. We're a little bit better today, but looking ahead there in Silver City, they're in the 80s and 50s. So, yeah, and 78 right now in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Why is it cooler, you might be wondering? Well, the elevation. It's 5 to 7,000 feet in the Silver City area. Gets up to about 7,000 as you head up to the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. It's a great getaway, especially this time of year. New Mexico, very enchanting, especially in early autumn. Start your planning for your approximately three-hour drive over to Silver City by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Professor Jeff Silvertooth is our contributor on agriculture, and while we're talking about New Mexico, Jeff loves New Mexico, and we, I think this would actually be a good time to kind of segue to what's going on with the world-famous Hatch New Mexico chilies. Those are those beautiful red chilies. I know I bought a wreath for the front door a week or so ago from one of these roadside groups that came over from Hatch, and just the smell of that wreath, those fresh, brilliant red chilies, just was so great. But they're becoming somewhat rare, aren't they, Jeff Silvertooth?
Yeah, they are. They're hard to find. Yeah, harder to find than they used to be. And as well, you understand it. Just it's a skill to put those things together, and that people fewer and fewer people are passing that on or picking up that skill and want to get into the business and make it. It's hard work for me, you know, but I don't have that skill set really. But yeah, that's quite a technique, and it's getting rare.
And we have some good chilies here in Southeast Arizona.
Well, absolutely. Matter of fact, Southeast Arizona and Cochise County, you get chilies. These New Mexico type chilies grow well at a higher elevation. So higher elevation meaning at about between about 4,000 to 5,000 feet elevation. Cochise County in the Sulphur Springs Valley, about 4,500 feet elevation. That's where the farming and the breeding program is based, with Curry Chili and Seed Company right over there in our near Pierce, Arizona. Mm-hmm. And that's the base. That seed company is the base for about more than 95% of the seed that goes in to support the Hatch green chili industry.
Wow.
So all those green chilies we call Hatch chilies are really originating from a breeding program right there in Arizona, Cochise County.
Arizona getting its due. All right, Jeff, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. We were talking about how some really think agriculture's time has passed here in Arizona. I could see, and I want to get your take on this, that there could someday be an initiative in Arizona, a ballot measure, that would prohibit the use of water in agriculture in Arizona, basically to end the agriculture industry in the state. Could you see that happening?
I could foresee that happening, yes. As an agronomist, as an agriculturalist working here in this state for nearly 40 years now, it's my 38th season here, summer season, and I have heard a lot of this. And, you know, again, I think even with people that are well-intentioned, it's that, not to be redundant, but what I mentioned a while ago, that facts may be facts, but perceptions become people's reality.
Because agriculture uses, again, give us that percentage.
70% of the water in this
state. So these folks hear that.
Right.
And then they're saying, well, you know, in this quick fix society, oh, let's just get rid of agriculture. Then we can have 70% of that water.
Right. And it's compounded by the fact that if they drive down the road, I-10, for example, and they hit an ag area, they look at it, and what do they see? They see crops like cotton, alfalfa, and they say, we're not even eating that stuff. What are we doing? I mean, I hear it from my colleagues at the university, you know, smart people.
Yeah.
This goes to show you can have more degrees in a thermometer and really not still know what, you don't know everything.
And they're saying to you, why are we investing all this money and time and water?
Right.
Yeah, so you're hearing that.
Oh, I've heard it a bunch. So, you know, answer to your question, it's entirely feasible. I hope it doesn't happen, but I think it's entirely, I'd be surprised if it didn't sometime in the next 10 to 20 years, particularly as the population increases and if the drought continues, et cetera, et cetera. So I wouldn't be surprised to hear that. However, that's an opportunity I look at that kind of a possibility as an opportunity for us to, you know, it's like this program we have right here, Bill. What we're trying to do is promote provide the facts.
Yes,
and promote a better understanding, education. That's the business I'm in, and mm-hmm. I think I like what we're trying to do here is to, boy, this we're responsible for the facts, be able to back up what we're able to what we say here. And I think it's important, just as we, not to be redundant again, but to, just to reinforce the point we were talking about earlier, the fact of the matter is that we, as Arizonans, as Americans, we are consuming food that requires about 800 to 2,000 gallons of water per day. Now, for 7.5 million Arizonans right now, if you take that, if you just take an average of 1,000, not between 800 or 2,000, just say an average of 1,000, that's 8.3 million acre feet of water required to produce the food we eat. Now, if you just go up to 1,500 gallons of water per day, mean more meat in your diet or just more food, which we commonly hit. Matter of fact, there are food calculators out there. Our listeners can dial those up online, and you can make an estimate on your own water footprint based on your own diet. It's not uncommon to come up close to 2,000 gallons an acre, or gallons of water per day to produce our food.
And the reason meat meat consumption would use more is because of the
Feeding the cattle, the processing cattle, and that entire process of producing the meat, the entire process. But, you know, so you say, well, there's, that takes us up then to 12 million acre feet to produce a year, to produce the food to support the 7.5 million people in this state, you see? And so there's a little chain of thought there, a little chain of arithmetic, and a lot of people get lost in that. But that's very important in my view. This is reality. And this is not our perceptions we are going to cut our own throat if we aren't careful about what we do with the management of these resources. So you'd say we have to be more efficient with water. We have to be more efficient with ourselves. And we've made improvements. You know, just take the past 40 years that I've lived in this state, I think it's important for us to recognize that we're not using, we have 7.5 million people in the state. We're using less water than we were 50 years ago. And we're being more efficient with it. We're producing more crops. We are producing more per acre, and we're supporting more people. The problem is we have to improve faster than the constraints and our resources are coming down on us. So there's a lot of pressure on us to do this. But for us as a civilization, as a society, as a group of people in a democratic republic, as we make our decisions and move things forward, is arm ourselves with the facts. That's what I would really encourage people to do. Make sure we get the facts and not just based on perceptions and hyperbole and emotion.
And the foods that we are, the crops we are growing, again, the naysayers say, why are we doing that? Let's just use our native crops.
Well, those crops that we're growing, they may not be consumed, all of it right here, but utilized. But we all live in a network. And really, so you take that differential between, say, the 5 million acre feet of water we use in the state for agriculture, that's 70% of the total 7 million acre feet wet water that we use, versus the 8.3 or 12 million acre feet of water that we use to require to produce our food. That differential, where's that coming from? So it comes from other places. We're contributing our agricultural products into a network, into a system that's global in nature. So our food products get shipped all around the world. For example, Bill, you and I and our neighbors here in town, we go into the grocery store and buy fruits and vegetables. A lot of those fruit and vegetable products are coming from beyond the borders of the United States, not just the borders of Arizona. Mm-hmm. A lot of it comes from Mexico, berries and fruits and vegetables that we eat on a regular basis. Now, our leafy green vegetables are right here in the United States. But all those other fruits and vegetables, just as an example, are coming from abroad quite often, by beyond the borders of Arizona, for sure.
Blueberries from Peru and Chile.
Absolutely.
And, especially
Mexico.
So next time you're in the supermarket, just look at the country of origin.
Absolutely.
On your raspberries or blueberries.
Right.
You might be surprised.
Right. I encourage folks to take a look at that water calculator. How much water do we each as an individual require every day with regard to our food production, not to mention what we pour out of the tap and we use as wet water.
All right, Jeff Silvertooth, always a pleasure. Great to see you, Jeff. I hope you have a great rest of the week.
Thank you, Bill. You too. Pleasure.
All right. On behalf of Professor Silvertooth and Tom, who does such a great job for us on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our program, Bill Buckmaster, saying the same thing I say pretty much every afternoon, wishing everybody well.